Okay, Shalom Aleichem. So we're starting Tanya today. We had an introductory share last week. I suppose our regal achos, we could say that we said that the Tanya is really the story of Avraham. So it's really right now in Yana de Yoma. It's the story of Avraham's service, moving from a human service of God to a godly service of God, to a Jewish service of God. The Tanya is not aimed at, it's not aimed at people who don't care about serving Hashem. The Tanya was written for people who were serving, there was something missing. To say something is a little bit of an understatement. They were serving, but they wanted to really serve. So Tanya's geared to that. It's basically from taking us, we've said this before, from taking us to the level of the person who wants to bring his father the slippers to the person who wants his father to have the slippers. Yeah, it's a complete paradigm shift of our Avodas Hashem, meaning it's not about me serving God. It's about God. That's called bittul, by the way. And bittul's got very bad, a lot of kind of stuff caught up with it, a lot of heavy baggage. So I try not to use that word. But really, bittul just means that it's not some kind of empty self, like zombie-like service. It just means that the focus of my world is God, not me. It's not about me serving God. It's about God being served. The nafka mina of that is tremendous. Because if my life is about me serving God, when I see other people serving God, depending, it could be relatively uncomfortable. But if my whole world is about Hashem being served, then when I see other people serving Hashem, that's a tremendous simcha for me. Okay? Not that we're doing it for that reason, but it really is a very big paradigm shift. And that's really the whole thrust of this sefer. Okay, so we'll start. We're not going to be learning it inside.
Inside out.
Yeah, so we're going to be learning the inside out. Okay, so the whole sefer is based on a pasuk. Ki koev elecha davar ma'od v'ficha levavcha la'asoisoi. Yeah, a pasuk in Devarim. It basically says this thing, meaning avodas Hashem, is something that's very close to you. In your mouth and in your heart to do. So the Rebbe asks later on, in your heart, in your heart, that doesn't make sense to me because it doesn't appear. Maybe I could do it, like I force myself to do it, but then my heart is close to Avodas Hashem. I see my heart all over the place. My heart's everywhere but Avodas Hashem. It's a very important. Also, the second sefer of Tanya, Shaykh of Emunah, begins like this as well. Basically, what the Rebbe is doing is validating our situation. A lot of previous svarim, other svarim will take the kind of the approach that there's something wrong if you're not into your Avodas Hashem. You're off. The Rebbe here goes in a completely different kivan. He says, I appreciate that this pasuk sounds foreign to you. And we're going to try and explain it. I had an experience with this one time, one of my children. I'm learning the Rambam with one of my, I think he was 10 at the time. He's 11 now. And if you've ever learned through the Mishnah Torah, you'll know that you'll spend hours and hours learning some of the most boring things you could ever imagine. Yeah. I mean, you could imagine, It's just, it couldn't get any more boring. And I'm sitting there with my 10-year-old son at Shabbos, and I look at him, I could see he was just worn off. It was like something like Kiddush HaChodesh, or something so... And I look at him, I see him bored out of his face. I said, this is mamash amazing, though. Isn't this fantastic? He's a good, Chassidish kid. So he's like, you see him, And I said to him, what are you talking about? This is the most boring thing I could ever imagine. Yeah, the place that I can't think of a place I'd rather not be right now than sitting in front of this book. And his smile, he changed. He almost changed at that moment. I validated how he was feeling. Not like you're wrong, you don't know how it is, you know, how it can be generally. I validated how he's feeling, and he changed. He actually changed there and then. So that idea of validation is just, I can't think of anything more important. When somebody asks you a question, and you say to them, that's not a question, and then you explain why it's not a question, it's a very intensely unpleasant experience, because you've been not validated, the opposite, you've been invalidated.
It's debilitating.
Absolutely. So the whole safe is built on a validation. How you're feeling is normal. But I'm going to explain to you how this pasuk is actually true. Okay? That's the beginning of the Sefer Tanya. The Alter Rebbe is...
Can you say the pasuk one more time? Ki koi
v'lecha davam oid. Ficha v'lavcha la'asoysoy. Okay. And then another important thing that I haven't begun the shiur with before is the first word after Tanya is Mashbiyin Oisoi, Ti Tzadik Val Ti Rasha. Yeah, they make you make a Shavua to be a Tzadik and to not be a Rasha. As you come down to this world, the Malachim, whoever it is, the based in Lamala, make you take an oath. Mashbiyin Oisoi, Ti Tzadik Val Ti Rasha. And even if the entire world calls you a tzaddik, you should be in your eyes like a rasha. Okay? So the whole thing is predicated on a shavua. And just to make this very practical for us, out of everything that I've learned I'm 45 years old, out of everything I've learned in my 45 years here, I can't think of anything more important than the idea of making and keeping promises. That is the beginning of everything. Making and keeping promises. Those four words, making and keeping promises, will transform your life, Lagamre. That's how we begin our life. Before we can make and keep a promise, we can't trust ourselves. And if you can't trust yourself, you can't love yourself. And if you can't love yourself, you can't be yourself. It's the beginning of everything. So making and keeping promises is the foundation of everything. And the book begins with Mashbiyin Oisei. This is a promise that we're fulfilling. This is a shavua that we took, that we're going to try and be a tzaddik and not to be a rasha. Okay. Who's familiar with the Sefer?
Familiar?
Yeah,
it's hard to say that, but
superficially?
You've been through it?
Superficially.
You've been through it?
No, I can't say anything. It's not of it.
Okay. So, the book's predicated on these five levels. Yeah? He introduces to us at the beginning of the Sefer, there's a tzaddik v'tovloi, a tzaddik v'raya. Again, if I'm using Hebrew and you don't know the translation, please tell me and I'll translate for you. Tzaddik v'tovloi, a complete tzaddik. Tzaddik v'raloi, a tzaddik who has ra, an incomplete tzaddik. A beinoni, a rasha v'tovloi, and a rasha v'raloi. Okay, these are the five different levels of Jew. And he's going to use that as a kind of springboard to develop the internal Jewish experience. These aren't five people, okay? These are five Jewish experiences. Jewish experiences. They are five internal experiences that we can cycle through daily, hourly, maybe even less than that as well. These are experiences that we have. So don't look at these five people as actual people. And trying to fit yourself into one of these categories that inevitably we will try and do is not going to be very productive. And you'll see how in different times of the day, in different stages of your life, these different experiences apply to us in different ways. So the Rebbe asks a question immediately on, it says, you should see yourself as a Rasha. If everybody thinks you're a tzaddik, you should see yourself as a Rasha. Immediately he says, but there's a problem with that, because if you see yourself as a Rasha, then you're not going to be able to be over the Shem b'simcha v'tuv levav. So the very first few lines of the Tanya, the Rebbe reveals to us the foundation of all of Avodas Hashem, which is Simcha. Simcha is the foundation of Avodas Hashem. There is no Avodas Hashem without Simcha. So now the question is, yeah, what's Simcha?
How do we get it?
Hmm?
And how do we get it?
And
how do we attain that?
Aha. Okay, the first question, what is it? But, yeah. So what is, anyone has a definition for us of Simcha?
G4 on a Shabbos Kodesh.
It's about the same.
Simcha, I would, just off the top of my head, say a sense of belonging.
Not how we're going to say that here.
Okay.
And that could engender a sense of Simcha. So Simcha has got a synonymous term.
Gratitude.
Huh?
Gratitude.
Gratitude, it's, again, yeah. It could...
Psichas Alev.
Psichas Alev.
I knew the answer.
That's the synonymous... Psichas Alev and Simcha are synonymous terms. Yeah, open-heartedness. So there's four madrigas to the heart. This is a whole show in itself. We'll talk about it another time.
Where is that synonym? Where is that from?
That's from Natanya. This is Masoya Ibn Makabal. So we have Timtum Alev, then we have what's called Shviras Alev, then we have Merivas Alev, bitterness of heart, and then eventually we get to Psichas Alev. There's another level after that, which is called Tuv Levov, which is something else, maybe. But Psichas Alev just means that the heart is open. Psichas Alev. And that's what Simcha is. Simcha is a free-flowing emotional matzav. You're available to emotion. That's Simcha. Now that means so that minister, not somebody dancing up and down and jumping around, but amazingly enough, the opposite of Simcha has two opposites. So everybody could probably guess that the opposite of Simcha is Atzfus, yeah? Is depression. But also the opposite of Simcha is Avelus, is mourning. Now I'll ask you another question. What's the opposite of Atzfus? Atzfus has two...
Cows?
No. Atzfus has two. Atzfus has two. As nice, no, not maybe, but not in this. Not in this bechira we're talking about. Atzfus has two opposites. Number one is Simcha, like we just said. The other opposite of Atzfus is Avelus. Avelus, mourning, is the heart is alive. It hurts, but you know, when someone's mourning, their heart is alive, mamash. It just hurts a lot. When somebody is in Atzfus, the heart is sealed up and closed. That's called Timtum Alev. Atzfus is the lack of emotion. Atzfus is a vacant space of emotion. It's kind of like a laziness. That's why it's connected to Atzlus. We'll talk about it with Shem. What time are we planning on? What time do we need to finish? Okay, so if we could do that, that's great. If anybody needs to walk out, yeah, just get up and walk out. There'll be no offense taken in any way. It's fine.
So why is Avelus the opposite?
Why is it the opposite of? Because we've got a. Is there a pen to write on that board?
Avelus is an open heart, but
from the left side, from the gavuras. It's an open heart to gavuras. Yeah, there's a pen.
In the marker, I don't think so. You know,
I think it's there, maybe.
The highlighter, maybe.
I don't think that's... Oh, here we go. This, it'll just take me... It'll be very quick.
No,
huh?
It was dried out.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
So,
I'll draw it.
Did you bring markers with your board?
I left them. Yeah. It's okay, it's fine. That's working?
No.
That's it? Okay. So you could draw it like this. Okay, this is... So the top here is Psichas Alev. Yeah, and here is... Timtum Alev. Okay.
Timtum
is
closed, right?
Timtum is like satum, like blocked up. Yeah? So that's the opposite, Psichas Alev. Yeah? So now we have over here Simcha. And we have over here Avelus. And we have down here, Atzvus. So see that?
Sickle cell being the definition of sinful is not a complete definition.
So it's the state of open-heartedness. Sinful is a more specific coordinate of open-heartedness on the right side, uh-huh, as opposed to on the left side. You look clear? Mm-hmm. So you see they're both
opposites.
Both opposites here, and they're both opposites here. Sorry?
Avelis would be like Kev live, like it's still.
You could say they call it Momorivus alive. That's Momorivus alive, something like that. Everyone's clear on that? We'll get back to a little bit later. Okay, so the foundation of Avodas Hashem is a healthy, free-flowing emotional state. Okay, we're not going to talk about that now about how to get there. We'll talk about that later in the book, B'ezrat Hashem. Okay, so the idea of these five levels, we'll talk about it in three levels. There's Tzadik, Beinoni, and Rasha. Okay, but really we can divide it into two levels. Yeah, Tzadik and Beinoni. Tzadik and Rasha. Those the Beinoni we're going to describe as a person who has the internal world of the Rasha, but who behaves like a tzaddik. So the Rasha has a divided world, an inner world. He has selfish feelings and he has godly feelings. But sometimes those selfish feelings are so strong that they can overwhelm his behavior. Yeah, the Tanya is predicated on a klal called Moich Sholet Al Halev, which means if you are a normal, healthy person, which means basically 90% of us, yeah, then you are in control of your behavior. No matter how much you think you're not in control of your behavior, you're in control of your behavior. And I think we've said before that the moshul that proves that is you're just about to do something that you feel you have absolutely no control over, like look at something on the computer or something like that, and you're like, about, and then someone jumps out and offers you $10,000 not to do that, yeah, that tithe just dissipates like a cloud. Gone. Yeah, so it's just what's the cheshbon. But if you're a normal, healthy human being, which is basically all of us, then you have complete shlita over your behavior, including, amazingly enough, your thinking also. You actually have control over your thinking. Now, can you silence your mind? That takes a lot of practice. But you can divert your mind. You can distract your mind very easily. And within a few seconds, literally within a few seconds, that previous thought is gone. It just takes a little bit of awareness, a little bit of consciousness. When you realize that thought jumped into your mind, that thought is of no benefit whatsoever. Now direct my mind something to somewhere else. And within a few moments, it's gone. The problem is people aren't aware, so they dwell on the ideas and they wallow in these negative thinking patterns, and then the synapses of their mind become like that. But it can be fixed relatively easily by just becoming aware and spending a good few months just being absolutely intolerant of any negative thoughts. And quite soon your brain becomes wired in a much more positive way. It's not far from us. I promise you that. It's not far from us. So the Tanya basically has a problem because when we're asking about what is a Beinoni, I just described to you what a Beinoni is, that he doesn't do any averas, but his inner world is divided. But the Tanya asked the question before. I gave you a spoiler alert. I spoiled it for you because we're going to explain that in like another few weeks. But the original question of the Tanya is like, what is a Beinoni? Like before, I said what I just said, which doesn't make sense. It's not a sensible thing that I just said to you. That's a masoira. What would a Beinoni actually be? If you're not a tzaddik and you're not a rasha. Like, you'd have to say, well, maybe there's such a thing as a power of act. There's an act that isn't a mitzvah and that isn't an avera. But we know when you plug into the equation bittul zman and everything else like that, bittul torah, v'chulei, I can't really think of anything that wouldn't fall into either category of mitzvah and avera, if you really want to be real with that. And then the other option is, well, maybe it means he's got half-half. He's got half mitzvahs and half avodas. So for that, the Tanya says that Rabba says that, like, I'm a Beinoni. And the Tanya says, well, look, if Rabba, who was like the Rosh Hashiva Pombadisa, who was Lo Pasik Pombi Megiyasa, he didn't stop learning Torah for 1 second, yeah, to even entertain the thought that a Beinoni is 50-50 of Avodah's mitzvahs, that he throws out the window immediately. And that another beautiful thing comes from that is you can say, well, maybe he was just being humble. And then you get the definition of humility. Humility doesn't mean that you can lie. Yeah, if there's like two options, you can take the less complimentary option. But you can't say, you know, I do avodas when you don't do avodas. So then we're left with the question. So it's interesting because if there isn't such a thing as an act that is not a mitzvah and not an avodah ultimately, you realize that when we plug that into our relationships with our wives, you realize that every single interaction we have with our wives is either building the relationship or the opposite. There is no such thing as a power of act in a relationship. No such thing. Every single interaction you have with your child, with your wife, with whoever it is, with your parents, yeah, it's either building the relationship or it's the opposite. It might be on a micro level. It might be on a very subtle level. There is no ambivalent behavior. It's always going to fall into one of these two categories. So, like I said, the Rebbe is going to be forced, so to speak, into defining the Beinoni as a completely different creature than what we were going to think originally. So, I suppose we should just jump straight in. There's one more thing he brings. An interesting, I never mentioned this in a shiur before because I just realized this recently, is why he's going through the different levels of why this can't be a tzaddik and why this can't be a beinoni. He explains that a tzaddik is somebody, libi chalal bekirbi, David says, somebody who's destroyed, who's killed his yetzahara. Yeah? And he says that he did it, the Gemara says, hagu b'tainus. He killed his yetzahara through tainus. And it's just so interesting that I just learned recently that the halachas of a tainus yochid, not a tainus tzibur, but the halachas of a tainus yochid is if you're not makabel the tainus on the mincha before the day of the tainus, it could be with hehu or do. If you're not makabel it, it's not a tainus. So if you wake up in the morning, it's before Alash Hashachar, and you're like, look, let's see how I go. I'm going to try and do a tainus today. And you go all the way through until tzeis or whatever. It's not considered a tainus. He says good things. You know, you're kovish, you're tivers, and you know, it's a good thing. But it's not a tainus. So it comes out, this is amazing, like we said before about making, keeping promises, is that the tikkun of a tainus is not eating food. The tikkun of the tainus is promising to not eat food and not eating food. So, wow. You realize how much that changes stuff? It's not about not eating food. It's about making a commitment to not eat food and then not eating food. Everyone's with me? That's the tikkun of the tainus. Not the not eating food. That's good. But the fact that you committed is even better. And that's really getting to a deep understanding of what our lower side is. The two statements of our lower side were said by Paro. He said, I think we mentioned this last week, he said, Ye'oli v'ani asisisoni. The Nile belongs to me and I made myself. One of the deepest understandings of the situation, we'll talk about that in a moment, of our lower side is hefkeirus, is the fact that I'm not owned, I belong to myself. That's the opposite of Yiddishkeit. Yiddishkeit, we define ourselves as Ovdei Hashem, we belong to Hashem. The Russia is hefker. By the way, hefker is Loshen Porik. It's the same oisius, as precious oil. Yeah, that's the desire. Hefka is also the the Dalad, just as an interesting side point, there's an Inyan and Torah of a Dalad and a Resh looking similar. Yeah? So in Shema, in the first paragraph of Shema, we have a big Dalad. And the Balaturim says there. Why is it a big Dalad? So you shouldn't confuse it with a Resh and say Hashem Acher, Chas V'Shalom. We say Hashem Echad. Yeah? There's a big Resh in the Torah. I can't remember the passage, you can find it. But there's a big Resh in the Torah where it says El Acher. Yeah? And it's, I will not bow down to El Acher. And it's a big Resh, so you shouldn't say Kel Echad. I will not bow down to Hashem. So there's this inyan of a Resh and a Dalad interchanging with each other, with the Resh for Acher and the Dalad for Echad. So if you change the Resh of Hefka to a Dalad, you get Pakad, which is what the Jew is. Nefkad, which means owned by Hashem. So the difference between being owned by Hashem and being Hefka is a tipa mamash, a tipa of joy mamash. A tipa of joy. And the Rasha is Hefka. And he can't stand the idea of feeling that there's a Baal over him. Yeah, as we can understand. And that's the tikkun of a tainus. Why? Because when you commit to something, and now later on in the day you're feeling like, well, I don't really want to do that. Well, if you don't have an owner, then you don't have to do that. But you've now made yourself a master, your word. You've committed to something. So you're actually you're nullifying your desire for hefkeiros through making and keeping promises. That's the inyan. That's the inyan, is you are mevatling your feelings and my sense of yesh, my sense of selfhood, to your word. And that's the beginning of everything. So the Rebbe mentions this over here, that was the way that David killed his Yetzirah. Mamash killed his Yetzirah through servitude. It wasn't just the fasting, yeah. It was the putting myself second, not just my tithes, but even deeper than that, putting myself second to my word, which is actually something that escapes me and goes away from me. That's a very, very important idea. Very important idea. Okay, so now we're going to get into the details.
That's the first time you understood it that way, that tinus?
Yeah, when I learned the halacha, I saw it's like modic. Wow, that's exactly the inyan of making keeping promises. Okay, so what is the lower side? What is the Rebbe now introduced the Nefesh of Bahamas. Okay, definition, you all know this because we've been learning for a long time now. Definition of a Jew. Anyone has a quick definition of a Jew?
Someone who denounces what is there.
Well, that's good. But that could also be a human being. A human also is included in that. I gave you a hint. He says thank you, like to be moida. So definition of a human being, as I was makabel for my Rebbe, is a human being with a neshama. Super simple. We now need to know what a human being and a neshama is. But that's the definition of a Jew. A human being with a neshama. Definition of a non-Jew is a human being. A neshama is not Jewish. A neshama is a neshama. There's neshamas, there's malachim, there's echolos, there's spheres, there's all different things in the olam. A neshama is not Jewish. A neshama is a neshama. Okay? A human being who is connected to a neshama, that's called a Jew. So now we're going to define what it means to be a human being.
Nobody says that Goyim could have neshamas. Is there anybody that says a Goy could have neshama?
By definition, he'd be Yisrael. That's the definition of Yisrael. He can have gradations of a human soul. There's levels of human souls. More, they can become more and more refined. And we'll find out here that this is going to be one of the biggest, the deepest surprises of me for learning in Yiddishkeit, learning from my Rebbe, is that Yiddishkeit, in fact, has nothing at all to do with Ruchnius. Yiddishkeit has as much to do with Ruchnius as it does with Gashmius. Ruchnius and Gashmius are both Nivrim. They're both creations, and Hashem is not created. He's not of creation. He's creatable. So a big toast that we've made in our generation is thinking that the more Ruchnius we become, the more spiritual we become, the closer to Hashem we've become, the more holy we've become. But that's not true at all. It depends what the mitzvah demands from us. If the mitzvah demands from us Ruchnius, like Yom Kippur, then that's the avoid of the day. If the mitzvah demands of us Gashmius, like Purim, then that's the avoid of the day. And we'll be coming close to Hashem through Ruchnius, through Gashmius rather than through Ruchnius, like on Shabbos. You're not allowed to fast on Shabbos. Yeah? Whereas when the mitzvah is to be misaneg, to eat nice foods, to be with your wife, etc., to sleep more.
Can't this be one of your lines that you say about this? You have to take your Gashmius and give it to Elikus, and you have to take your Ruchnius and give it to Elikus.
Yeah. So what I learned when I was in Eishes Torah is that and everywhere else as well, is that the avoid of Yiddishkeit is bringing Ruchnius to the Gashmius. But as I learned deeper, I realized that isn't at all what it is. It's just what Yoel said. The avoid of Yiddishkeit is bringing Elikus to the Ruchnius and the Gashmius. Just because we're in such a material society, we don't see Ruchnius, so we've just imagined that now Ruchnius means Kedusha, and it doesn't. Ruchnius can be very, very self-involved. I've seen that very clearly. Ruchnius can be extremely self-involved. Avodas Hashem is selflessness. And that's going to be our working definition of Toiv and Ra. Okay, Toiv is selfless, and Ra is selfish. Selfless means the ability to recognize the existence of another. Which is sounds like, well, of course, you know, but it's not, of course. It's very, that's already an elevated level. To look at the world and not see everybody as a detail in your reality is actually Yotzi Min HaKlal. Most of us, by default, when we look at people and we look at the world, we're actually trying to fit them into me. How does he relate to me? How does that relate to me? How is that going to help me? How is that going to hinder me? Should I bring it close to me? Should I push it away from me? Me, 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 me. Yeah? Maybe it would be good for me to help this person. Yeah? Might not say that in my mind, but that's a egocentric way of looking at the world. Okay? And if you really want to be like very stark in the language, you could call that an Avodah Zarah. What's the Avodah Zarah?
Yourself.
It's me. In fact, that's the only thing that is Avodah Zarah. Is it worth explaining it? Okay, because we've got extra time, this is a very, very amazing idea that explains how all Avodah Zarah is really self-worship. There's nothing else. So what's the paradigm of Avodah Zarah in the Chumash?
Baal.
Pa'or. What was the Avodah of Baal Pa'or? Yeah. So it's an amazing idea. Like, what's up with that? You would defecate in front of your idol. Yeah? Great. And that's the paradigm of all Avodah Zarah. So, hold cup a little bit. It's very beautiful, but just have to hold me. There's two kinds of Ritzoinus. There's what's called Panemius HaRatzon and Chitzoinius HaRatzon. Panemius HaRatzon is really something that gives you pleasure. I mean, you're doing it for itself. Okay? Chetzonius HaRatzon is a means to an end. So the Panemius HaRatzon would be lying on the beach in wherever, or skiing down the slope in the Alps, yeah? That's what you really want. Whereas Chetzonius HaRatzon would be the aeroplane, the ride on the plane to France or to wherever. You don't want to go on a plane, but you need to go on the plane. Okay, so someone says you want to go on a plane right now, you're like, yeah, I want to go on the plane. But what you really want, I would rather not go on a plane, to be honest, but I have to go on a plane so I can go skiing. That's what I really want to do. So anything that we're doing that is an end, that is called Panemius HaRatzon. Anything that we're doing as a means to an end, that's called Chetzonius HaRatzon. And just as a side point, clarifying that in your life is, I don't know of anything more important than that. Personally, and getting those two things mixed up, I think we mentioned this last week, getting those two things mixed up ends and means to ends, making means to ends ends, and making ends means to ends, that's called genum. When the means become ends. For example, your car is a means. Yeah? If someone's car has become an end unto itself, then genum. And your wife is an end. Your children are ends. Yeah, you're not trying to get something from your wife. You're not trying to get something from your kids. Yeah, chas v'shalom. You're there for them. You fit into their reality. That doesn't mean you give them everything. In fact, forget it. Most of the time it means you don't give them stuff. And nature's just a guy that. That's not what we should do. If your children and your wife become means to ends, chas v'shalom, that's gehenim also.
It's also gehenim for them.
And gehenim for them. Absolutely. It's gehenim for everyone. Clarifying what are ends or means to ends, I don't know of anything more important. I mean, talk to anybody in the secular world and speak to them. Like, you know, people will say, yeah, like, you're working, like, you know, you're working 14 hours a day, 16 hours a day, yeah? What's with you? You know, would you die for your kids? I'd be like, yeah, of course I would. Like, well, what, you, and you can't scratch together an hour to sit with them and see them every day or something like that, half an hour? Like, yeah, I know I should. No. What's happened is you've mixed up ends and means. Work is a means. Now it's become an ends. And like the kids running around the house, I'm now in an annoying position because my older kids now are so willing to help because we've put so much energy into that now I don't have any right to ask them to help me anymore. Because it's not chinuch anymore. It's just my laziness.
Wow.
For all the years until now, it's been chinuch. But, you know, Yona, could you get me a glass of water, please? Or I'll select the most lazy-looking one, the one on the couch in the most lazy format. Yeah, and they get really lazy, you know? And I'm like, Esther, could you get me a glass of water, please? And then one of my other kids will get up and I say, no, Esther, could you get me a glass of water, please? But now they've gotten to the place. So, because I've got some very young children still, but they're limited in what they can do. So
you still get water. What? You still get water.
Exactly. But now with my older children, I try my hardest to not ask them for, and, you know, unless you need something, yeah, but otherwise I try my hardest not to ask them for something, because then they're becoming a means to an end. And it's important to understand these things on such a subtle level. You can't, if you know something that's true.
You can get a mitzvah though.
What?
You're giving that. You,
so if that's your kavana, then that's, and I am. I'm giving. But when you want a glass of water, and it's not the idea of, I'm not thinking about giving you the mitzvah. Giving you the mitzvah of chinuch. That's really in the front of my mind. Yeah, seder. Maybe that's a good heter for me.
Depends on Thursday. It's a mitzvah. Get the water.
Yeah.
So come home with a big pronunciation. Putting this out there.
Yeah.
You're saying vis-a-vis. Sorry, that's a bit of a tangent, but vis-a-vis your kids, you shouldn't do anything. You shouldn't interact with them in any way that is
selfish.
Yourself.
If you do that, and look, again, we're human and we're on a learning. You know, we're growing, and there's room for mistakes, and there's a lot of room for mistakes in chinuch, a lot of room for mistakes. But when you learn something that's true, it goes all the way through. All the way through. So if you've decided that stealing is wrong, yeah, then, you know, a guy left the shampoo in the mikveh and you forgot your shampoo, then you wouldn't take that. It's not just a Ponzi scheme that you avoid. So in the idea of not using my children for myself, that also comes down to getting me a glass of water, no? I'll just, as a side point as well, there's a lot of types of relationships. The two main types of relationship is what's called face-to-face and back-to-back. Okay? In Kabbalah, we talk about this a lot. Panim upanim and ach la'ach. So a back-to-back relationship is like your relationship with the cab driver. Okay? You only want something from him. And you could switch him out with any other cab driver. It wouldn't make any difference to you whatsoever. Nothing about him whatsoever. You want to get to Ramayma. Okay? And what's his relationship to you? Just wants your money. That's called a back-to-back relationship. Okay? That's the, by the way, just as a side point, that's the kadusha of giving a tip. Because when you give a tip, you actually turn a back-to-back relationship into a face-to-face relationship. I learned that from a guy in LA at the end of a chasna. I was the photographer, and it was my business, and he paid me the money. And then he said, and by then, this is for you. I'm the only person working, it's my business. So that was also for me. But that wasn't, that was for my service. Then he gave me 200 shekels and said, and this is for you. And the relationship just went...
He validated it.
He gave it to me. It wasn't about my work, it was about me. So when you give a tip, this is the soid of giving a tip, is make sure you say, pay him the money, and oh, by the way, this is for you. The you is the... That's when you're face-to-face. Why? Because when you're face-to-face, you don't need their name. You just say you. That's how it... Mekudeshously. I was going away from the point. Anyway, so a back-to-back relationship is when I want something from you and you want something from me. Yeah? Now that relationship, the mechanics of how reality works, I've understood it, is that relationship gets more and more distant. So when you're using your child for something... That is a segula, chas v'shalom, for rebellion. This is like the most important thing I've ever learned in chinuch, is if you're trying to get something from your children, yeah, that is a segula to have them rebel. So we're looking at what happened, what did they see on the TV, or what happened with this or that, and we're trying to work on this. But the foundation of everything is it about my child, or is it about something I'm getting from my child? And that could be very coarse, like, covered, or you know, it could be trying to vicariously live my life for my child, etc. Obviously, but it gets much more subtle as well. You have to be very much on guard for that. Okay, you're there for them. You should see yourself as a detail in their reality. And again, that means probably not buying them that thing that they want. Yeah, more often than not. Okay, you have to make a value judgment on that. But that doesn't mean that you're there for them, giving them whatever. It means you're there for their better good. So now when you're in a face-to-face relationship, what does that do? If a back-to-back relationship causes distance and rebellion, a face-to-face relationship gets closer and closer and closer and closer and closer. So if you're in a relationship with your children for them, yeah, you will get closer and closer and closer, and they will want to get closer and closer and closer to you. And then that's when the idea of being an example makes a difference. That's what Stephen Covey said is the key to chinuch. He said that the key to education is there's three pillars, three keys. Example, example, and example. That's it. You need to give your children a dugma of what it is that I want to aim for. You can't expect anything more from your children than you. You can maybe expect, you shouldn't expect anything, but you can maybe expect at least you. Because you're an example for them to gain. So if you're not so happy with your performance, yeah, then you've got no right to have any gripes with your children. But so once the relationship is face to face, and you've now given them a dugma of what to become, they will want to become you. Not you as in they will want to emulate you on their level. Understand? With their koichas, with their talents. Not you as in to become a carbon copy of you, but they'll want to emulate you avoider. So that's face-to-face. And back-to-back, why do we say this? We went off on a...
You went off on a tangent, you said you can explain something.
Oh, so why is avoider zara always self-worship? And how is that expressed by the avoider of pa'or? Defecating in front of the idol, yeah? So, avodah zarah means, the Pasha understanding of avodah zarah is that you're attributing independent koyach to something other than Hashem. Yeah? That could be the god of rain or the god of the sun, or it could also be the god of economics or the god of media or whatever you feel is more powerful than you. Okay? Now, why, for example, would somebody pray to the god of the sun? Or let's say the god of rain. Why would somebody pray to the god of rain and he wouldn't pray to the god of fertility?
Because he thinks the god of rain controls everything.
Why
would some guy pray to the god of rain but not pray to the god of fertility?
He thinks he himself is responsible for fertility.
That's the point. He wants rain. He needs rain for something. He's got children already, so I don't need to delve into this god. So I need rain. Yeah, why? Well, because I've got a field and I need to get some crops and I need some, etc. So I'll pray to that god. So Avodah Zarah is not praying to all the gods, unless your mum is really, really in need, yeah? But you choose specific entities that you're davening to because that's what you need. So it's not a service for the Elohus or Elohim Acherim. It's really my needs. That's the very definition of Elohim Acherim, is that I'm praying to this power, but not that power. Why? Because this power is relevant to me. That power's not relevant to me, so I don't care. So who's the focus of my world? What's the pnimius ratzon? What's the chitzonius ratzon? It's the service, the worship, or it's me? Me. I'm the pnimius ratzon, and the service, the worship, is chitzonius ratzon. It's almanas. It's so that I can, yeah? Now that's the exact inyan of eating. Food, you take a piece of food, and within the food is the spiritual energy of the food. Yeah? It comes in a container. That container is pushed out of the goof. And it's the most revolting substance in the world. It's kulu means to an end. So what's the, when it comes to food, you've got the inner ratzon, you've got the chitzonius ratzon. The inner ratzon is the energy that I'm getting from the food. That's what I want. And all the tiny also. And the chetzonius ratzon is the keli that it comes in, the gashmias that energy is contained within. That gashmias gets pushed out the backside. Yeah, that's why Peor was the avoider of the tsoya. It was giving to. That's what avoider zara is. You give to avoider zara your chetzonius ratzon. You can't give to avoid a zara your panemius about some why, because there's only two options in the world. The world boils down to two options. Me or him is blach. In every single situation. That's it. Reality is super simple. The application of reality can get more complicated, but reality itself is super simple. It's always a choice between me and him. So when I'm praying to an avoid a zara, I'm not praying to an avoid a zara. I'm worshipping myself. How do I do that? Because I have to get my goodies from this power that I've attributed power to. So the image of that is you're giving it your tsoya, which is by definition the most means to anything you can have. Okay? So reality always comes down to a choice between me and him, is Baruch.
So what's the opposite with true about this agenda? The opposite of him?
True avoidance is Hashem. Meaning, why am I serving him? Not so that I can get kids, not that I can get a shidduch for my kid, not that I can have a panasa, v'chule v'chule. Why are you serving him? It's the same answer as why do you want to live? Why do you want to live? That's the answer. Kacha. There is no reason why you want to live. Reasons flow from your desire to live. Now that you want to live, you attach all these different reasons to it, yeah? But your desire to live is reasonless. It's a real desire, yeah? That's the Jew's desire to serve the Bona Shoylem. Why do you want to serve Hashem? I know.
I'm Jewish.
It's like... So reality always boils down to a choice between me and Hashem. Now that me can take form of lots of different forms, yeah? It can look very, very elevated. It can look extremely elevated. That's why just because a person works very hard and is avoided Hashem, it's not a raya that he's a tzaddik. Yeah, if he's a tzaddik, he's probably going to be working hard in his avodas Hashem. But you have certain people who just work hard. If you would take him out of Yiddishkeit and put him onto Wall Street, he'd be like the Havdol. He'd be like one of these, you know, crazed guys who's working 20 hours a day and, you know, whatever it is. That's just a meter of a person. a person, a tzaddik, is a genuine tzaddik is a person who is serving Hashem for Hashem. I'm not trying to get anything out of my service. That's what the tzaddik says. It's not al manas. That's really the level. So it could be that a person's working very hard because he works very hard, and if he doesn't work very hard, he feels like a schlepper. So that's not a tzaddik. That's just the guy who works really hard. Thank God he's in the right. He's in the right community, and he's, you know, that's nice. Baruch Hashem. That means he's a tzaddik.
Maybe it's even his avodah is actually to work less.
It could be many times. Many times. Lots of times that's the case.
Into the compulsiveness.
And be more giving to your family, like, you know.
Less session.
Yeah, exactly. Put the safer down, maybe, and spend a few minutes with your wife. Yeah, actually spend a few minutes with her, not just thinking about. I used to know somebody who has this idea of, everyone thought he was a tremendous tzaddik, and I don't want to say anything bad about him, but from my experiences with him, it appeared to me that he was just an extremely intense person. Yeah, but when you'd speak to him and hear his approach to Avodas Hashem, you'd realize that he was just an extremely intense person, and he was just a person. Wow, you're working really hard, just like Elon Musk works really hard, Lahavdil, for his business, you know? That's great, but that's not the level of Yisrael. That's not what Yisrael about. So we've got this struggle between ourself and Hashem. Like I said, the self can take many madrigas, and my Rebbe gave an example. He defined narcissism. I think we mentioned this already, but the definition of narcissism is a person who can't say no, who can't do something for his future self. Narcissist, the guy, you remember the story, he looked in the water and saw his reflection. He was so enamored by how beautiful he was, he just sat there, he starved to death. Yeah? So you're like, wait, why don't you get something to eat? He's like, I can't. But you're going to die. I can't. So the ultimate level of Ra is a person who can't even do something for his future self. That's already a level of selflessness. So you meet, you know, the very put together successful people in the Goyisha world, you'll see that they've achieved a level of selflessness in many ways, in that they're doing something for their future self. They're not smoking now because they know in a few years down the line that's going to have severe repercussions. Or they're saving now because they know in a few years down the line that's going to have also very healthy, that's going to have healthy repercussions. They're able to put themselves now aside for later on. Okay, so that's the struggle. So don't think, this is very important, that this idea of trumping one tithe with another tither is Avodas Hashem. It's on the way to Avodas Hashem, but that's still not really Avodas Hashem. Avodas Hashem, the level of Lishma, is when the Avodah is coming from a place where we can't even articulate why we're doing it. It's not for Olam Haba for sure. It's not for me feeling good in this world. It's not for me feeling close to God. It's not for any of these things. It's like asking the sun, why do you shine? You look at you and be like, what do you mean, why do I shine? I'm the sun. I shine. So I do. That's like the ultimate level of Lishma, going beyond any kind of reason why we're doing it. So in the animal soul, yeah, the human soul that we have, there's levels of free will. It's not really called free will. There's levels of choice. Yeah, you can put away, you can go on a diet so that you look nice. That's not a fight between Hashem and myself. That's a fight between myself and my future self. Yeah, understand what I've said? Yeah? Yeah? So it's not about how I'm acting as a human being. That's one avoider that we have. We have the avoider of a human, but then we have when we stick the two parts together, the neshama and the we're gonna call it the Nefesh Bahamas, yeah, the human soul. Now we actually have real Bechira. But we're just talking right now about the human soul. Okay? So what is the human soul?
I mean, we're not really just a human with a neshama, because our humanness also is from a different place.
So we are a human with a neshama, but the humanness is from a different place. although it can be in this generation, from what I learned from my Rebbe, and I heard him naming the Babashi Rebbe, is that there are human beings in our door who have got the same human makeup as us. The difference between the human, the difference between the humanity of Yisrael and the humanity of the Umos Olam is the difference between a treif piece of meat and a kosher piece of meat. Which, for all intents and purposes, there is no difference, except for one's kosher and one's treif. It looks the same, it smells the same, it tastes the same, it costs the same. You couldn't tell the difference between either of them. So to what you said is very important, because you can eat a kosher piece of meat, you can't eat a treif piece of meat, and that's why it's available to be elevated. But we can learn out a lot of healthy things from books like The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People and those kind of books from the Goyim, who have analysed and who have really kind of come to understanding their humanity. Okay, so we... Is that you want to say something?
I don't know how the last thing you said may follow from that, but...
We have a lot in common. We have much more in common on a human level than you might think. Because we hear that the human soul comes
in
the keepers and the...
molecules of meat.
It's still from Klipa. It's still from Klipa. We'll discuss that, B'zot Hashem. So we've got the human soul. What is a nefesh?
Your blood.
The nefesh is in the blood. The nefesh is in the blood, like...
life force.
Okay, that's better. But yeah, just a good muscle for that is a battery. If you crack open a Duracell battery, yeah, you have that like that stuff that you, the juice that you don't want to get on your hands. Yeah, the chashmal lives in that meets whatever you call it, that battery acid, just like the nefesh lives in the blood.
It's
charged. Isn't the blood is charged with nefesh in a sense. That's like what you're saying.
Isn't it hovering on top of the steam of the blood or something? That's where the nefesh found.
Not that the way I understand it. It's not. It's one with the blood. It's mamish meshed with the blood. There's also madrigas as well. There's madrigas, but the pashat I'm saying is meshed with the blood. On the deepest level, a nefesh is oinig. Pleasure. What makes you separate from God?
Sadness.
What?
Sadness.
Sadness. Well, that, yeah, but the deeper understanding of that is sadness is a pleasure. That's what we're talking about. What really is the self? What really is the self?
Thoughts.
No way.
Want.
What?
Want. Need.
Want, even deeper. What drives want? What drives Ratzon?
Oh, tiny desire.
Tainug. That is what a nefesh is. It's just a tainug atzmi. A pleasure. So we say like that piece of chocolate gives me pleasure, yeah? The real correct way, if you want to understand it, like how the mechanics of it work, you don't say that piece of chocolate gives me pleasure. You say that piece of chocolate touches my pleasure. Even to call it my pleasure is a concession to my conscious mind. You are the pleasure. Everything else derives from that. Mazel tov. So, on the deepest level, yeah, nefesh is a tainug, an independent tainug from God's tainug. The nefesh and a kis is the same thing, but its tainug is the same as God's tainug. So now, when we understand that the nefesh is really a tainug, yeah, and then everything else devolves from that, just so I'll say it very quickly, this demands a lot of, we'll talk about this in detail later, is that tainug goes out through rotson. Rotson energizes seichel. Seichel gets born into midas, and midas gets expressed as behavior. That's the whole system. Tainug energizes Ratzon. Tainug goes out through Ratzon. These words are also important. Tainug goes out through Ratzon. Tainug and Ratzon are indivisible in many ways. Tainug goes out through Ratzon. Ratzon energizes Seichel. Seichel is born into Midas, Avinira, emotions. And emotions are expressed through behavior. That's the whole system. When we get that very clear.
Tainug starts with Tainug.
Tainug, Watson, Seichel, Midas, Levushin.
And that's a human.
And it's also, it's all, if that's a soul, so okay. It could be a human soul, it could be a godly soul. It's the same mechanics, just with the Tainug is different. Either it's God's Tainug or it's an independent Tainug. That's an other. The Tainug of another.
Like when we say a taiva, you can't ask a Shiloh on a taiva.
Yeah,
is that's taiva what
it's taiva. Taiva and taiva is that's what you're talking about. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So we're, when we get that system down clear, we'll spend a lot of time explaining that. What I just said there is a few hours of explanation, which we'll get to B'zvat Hashem. But when you get that system down very clear, you will be so empowered. Because you know how you work. It's like understanding how it all works. Why do I think like this? Why do I speak like this? Why do I feel like this? Why am I understanding it like this? Why do I want this? How comes that? When you put it all together, it's mamash so empowering. So the Nefesh HaBahamis is a Tainug Acher. It's another Tainug. Really, there's only Hashem's Tainug. There's a Tainug Acher. Yeah? It's another Tainug. That is called Klipa V'Sitra Achra. Okay, Klipa and Sitra Achra are incredibly important terms to understand. I've said this before that being Jewish and not knowing what Klipa is, and I really mean this, is like being a carpenter and not knowing what wood is. It's insane. I mean, a lot of people get through their whole life being nice, good, from Jews and never have any definition of what Klipa is. But once you realize what Klipa is, you'll realize, like, how could I have not known this for all these years? That's how I felt, and everybody who's done all these shirim felt as well. So, Klipa is our job description. Well, what is a Klipa? Just done. What's a Klipa?
A shell.
A shell, a husk, like a shell of an egg or a peel of a banana.
Means to an end.
Means to an end. Thank you. It's a means to an end, and it covers over, which is really the same thing. Yeah? I'm not going to go into that right now. We'll do it another time. It's not a shame. That Klipa is a means to an end. What is the end of Klipa?
So it was like Creed. So
No, Klipa is like the actual food, which okay. is containing okay. the... Oh, okay. Once it's gone out, now it's like useless. That's maybe... it's still Klipa, but it's a lower level of Klipa.
Pre.
The point of the Klipa... No, the point... Well, okay, what's the pre in the context of creation? Why did Hashem? Why does Hashem?
The Tzaitzis.
Okay. What? Yeah.
What's the question?
What?
What's the question?
What? Klipa writ large on a cosmic level is a means to an end. What's the end of Klipa?
Achdus Hashem.
Revealing.
How do we get to Achdus Hashem?
By going through Klipa.
Yeah. By revealing that. That's what's being hidden by the Klipa.
Why didn't he just reveal it in the first place?
Bechira. No word.
Oh, thank you. Bechira. Klipa Bechira is the same gematria. Klipa is there to provide you with Bechira, which means Klipa is there to give you an alternative option. If it wasn't for Klipa, if there was just Tzimtzum, there wasn't Klipa, I won't explain that right now, but if there was just Klipa, yeah, so if there was just Tzimtzum and no Klipa, yeah, there could be a world that looks similar to this, but you would be like a robot. You would be a malach. You would be absolutely aware of the Ribono Shel Olam. It's Klipa that makes you feel that there's me, and maybe also God, but that gives you the feeling of there's me.
Is Klipa a function of having a Yitzhahara?
No, having a Yitzhahara is a function of Klipa.
I'm saying when there's no more Yitzhahara, is there going to be no more Klipa? Does that mean there's no more Klipa? Means we just have Tzimtzum, we see everything.
Makes sense.
Achdus?
Maybe. There's madrigas of getting rid of the Yitzhahara.
I said, finally.
On the ultimate level, Tzadik Gamor has been removed from Klipa, and he is
just almost like a seeing disorder.
It is exactly that. It's a lens, exactly. It's a filter. It's that Tzimtzum is an aperture, which means it stops down the light, yeah? It's a din on quantity, not quality. And Klipa is a filter, it's a din on quality, not quantity. So what's the difference? I wasn't gonna say this, but anyway. If you shut down the window and you leave a teeny little crack, a beam of light comes through the window, yeah, you know that's sunlight. You know, it's sunlight and not light from some other kind of source. That's Simson. Meaning that Hashem would stop down the light, the world would appear, but you would be absolutely cognizant of the Ramashon. Simson, when you actually filter the light, Klipa, when you filter the light, which is called Hestaponim, by the way, Ponim, why is it called Hestaponim? Because we said Panemia Zaratzon. So he's hiding his Panemia Zaratzon. That's Klipa. That's Dafka, why it's called Hestaponim. It's very important to know all these terms that we use for all of Kabbalah and all of Chazal. Yeah, the terms that Chazal gave to these words are the whole Inyan Mamash. You just need a shtickle bikush and a rebbe and whatever. But these Inyanim are, the whole Inyan is contained in these funny words that we go, well, that's just how we say it, you know? Like Michael Ben Joyce, just what you call it, you know? But then you'll realize if you learn deeply, the whole Inyan of Achilah Shabbos is nichlal in that, those words for another time. So we've got this klipa dikka. That's what it means to be human. It means you're of creation. That is other to Hashem. And it's that element of us now that the Rebbe is going to talk about. We're not going to finish the poet now. I think maybe we should hold it. And we'll pick up next week because we'll open up another. It's nice if you've got more time and we're sitting together, like online. It's like you have to do it all generally online. But we don't need to do each class each week, so we can spread it out. So just to very quickly recap, is that definition of Tov and Ra that we're going to be dealing with is selfless and selfish, which we could also call opaque and transparent. And that would also help us understand the idea of Klipa, because Klipa is opaque. Yeah, and Kedusha is transparent. Okay, so we'll get into that.
Was Adam before the Chet?
Yeah, exactly. The Inyan. That was the whole Inyan of the being covered in the nail. You saw right through exactly the Inyan. So we've got Tov and Ra, which is selfish and selfless. We've got the three Madregas, Tzadik, Benoni, and Rasha. The Tzadik has got an inner world which is aligned with God and he behaves correctly. The Rasha has got an inner world that is not aligned with God and he also doesn't always behave correctly. And the Benoni is somebody who has an inner world that is like the Rasha but who behaves correctly. That was a spoiler, I just told you what's going on later on. And then we have we introduced the Nefesh Bahamis, which is our human element. It's not the body. The body is just a piece of meat. Without the Nefesh Bahamis, what is called also the Nefesh Achiyunis, the life-giving soul, the body would fall on the floor. Yeah. So we're talking about the spiritual element of our humanity. Yeah, not the physical element, which is this. The spiritual element of our humanity, which is called the Nefesh, which we said really is a Tainug Acher. It's a tainug that isn't Hashem's tainug. So, truthfully, its very essence is a delusion. The fact that there is no other tainug other than God's tainug. There's only Hashem's pleasure. So the fact that this being, its very essence, is its own pleasure, it means that its very essence is actually not an essence. You know what its very essence is? Its very essence is actually an empty space. That's a moedic idea.
Is this the tanag we're getting by Yalom Haba, the tanag we're going to get in Lasalobo?
That's a loaded question. There's all madregas to that. The most pasha understanding of that is that's a tanag of being, of understanding things in Elikus. That's a different... That will confuse us.
So also the Chalal Makirbi is the realization that bit is just the Chalal.
The idea. That's the place of the Shvira, where the Shvira Sakalim took place, the empty space that got left. Maybe you could even say it's the Chalal Panui that's before that. But either way, the very essence of your humanity is just an empty space.
It's comforting.
You know, the very... What?
It's comforting.
It is. Do you know what the very essence of your neshama is? Hmm? The Rabbeinu Shlomo.
That's
it. What? The essence of Hashem. That's the essence of the neshama. And our goal is to make this delusionary creature that's called the human a means to that
end. The tainug of the acher is a halal, is a non-existent.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why Rabbi Moshe Shapiro said that by when Yaakov asked the angel his name.
Exactly.
He said, I don't have a name. There's no name. That's his name. There's no name. There's nothing there.
Yeah. It's like a peanut. When you open up a peanut, there's an empty channel in the middle of a peanut. That's the Arba Gullius. On the outer level of peanut, you have that. You actually have a first level is like a green thing you don't see. Then you have the second level, the crunchy thing, yeah? Then you have the third level, which is the chaff bit that goes like that, yeah? So that is Bavel, Bavel, Madai, Yavon, Edom. That these are the four galluses, yeah? Babylon is Persia, Babylon, and the Madai is Persia, and then Yavon is Greece, and then Edom, which lasts 2,000 years more, basically, than all the other ones. That's because that's the empty gap in the, when you open a peanut, that empty channel. Nice. That's what we're being masakan here. Yeah, I saw that in the name of the Mara, I think.
That, being a peanut is never going to be the same.
Being
a peanut is never going to be the same.
No, Fasha, yeah. When I open that up and I look, I'm like, wow, this is what we're trying to fix. We've been in 2,000 years of intense gullus to fix this little channel here. That's what we're fixing.
Is there a way to upload those source sheets or just eat the peanut?
Yes, okay.
Or not want to?